Hi, everybody. It's Jean Nathan. This is Crosstown Conversations with news about New Orleans that counts, about our economy, our environment, our culture, and some occasional politics. Thank you for joining and enjoy the show.
I know that we can.
I know darn well we can work it out. Well, yes, we can. I know we can, can. Yes, we can, can. Or why can't we if we want to? Yes, we can, can.
I know we can make it work. I know we can make it if we try.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can, can. Yes, we can.
Great gosh, you might.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can, can.
Scott Howard has worn a few hats in his life, as so many of us in New Orleans have done, and people in general. I mean, it's rare these days for somebody to stay in some corporate position all their life, as was common in a prior time. Now we look at life as in segments, where one segment we might be, as Scott was, a banker. In another segment, he could be a green activist, which is what he is at the moment. He also is a painter and is making a lot of art. How many paintings do you have ready for your next show, Scott?
Well, it's kind of an odd show. I don't know if anybody's going to be willing to show them all, but the theme calls for 60 paintings, of which I've done
Wow, that's a lot more than I thought. That's great.
Yeah.
And it often is the work is considerably, and I don't know what percentage, but related to your passion about the green environment in our town, but not just there, elsewhere, but you're working on our town. And you have a program, I'll let you introduce, that the city council is going to soon make some decisions about how they want to work or support it. And we want to make sure that people who care about the green city will share their opinions, their concerns and interests with the city council as it takes this up. So give us a little intro to your current initiative, which is, I think, very brief.
Very brief, sure. Well, the initiative has resulted in a parks master plan that's entitled The Big Green Easy. And it was executed by a world-class firm based in Denver, Design Workshop, and it's there have been other plans that have looked at the park system in the past, but none has ever exhaustively examined the whole city in order to take a more holistic view to how our overall green space could function better. And this plan does that, and it's been over a year in the making, and it's an excellent plan. I encourage everybody to read it. You can find it on the city's website. Just Google The Big Green Easy. It will pop up. It will be lodged in the youth and families department, and it's very good. And with respect to Monday, when city council will be hearing about it in the form of a presentation given by a couple of members of the administration, it's our hope that it might be adopted by city council and eventually to be incorporated within the city's grand master plan.
So this plan, you're saying, was really considered and executed by a community group as opposed to a city department. The city department may have been very much engaged and critical to it moving forward. But do I understand correctly that this was a product of a community initiative?
Well, not good question. Yes and no. I mean, I think that, you know, Parks for All, the organization that I've been involved with now for 10 years, you know, did take some initiative to recommend when the city developed its strategy around a new millage structure at the beginning of Mayor Cantrell's administration. We asked the city to consider folding a master plan within that, and the city agreed to it, along with the four park partners who were involved in working together as part of that new millage structure, namely City Park, Audubon, Parks and Parkways, and Nord. And between the five of them, the administration and the four park partners, they agreed that a park master plan was a good idea and set out to accomplish it. And, you know, entirely to their credit, they figured out how to raise the funding for it, which was not inconsiderable. It was, you know, on the order of $430,000 that we received in the form of a grant from the National Park and Recreation Association, which we won through a competitive process. And all that was initiated by the group. So, you know, this is very much a broad community endeavor that includes people who are expert at running parks, as well as the city administration, which has demonstrated from the beginning of its terms, I should say, a real appreciation for the quality of our life as enhanced by green space.
So, you know, I have to say right off the bat that there's a lot of initiatives out there for things that will be good for the city. I would say too many of them don't happen, don't get endorsed by city officials. So, I mean, my first question really has to be, you know, how do you account for your success in getting this off the ground? Now, you mentioned four partners, and I have to make sure, I really honestly didn't have a lot of time to prep for this because of health circumstances. But so please repeat for me, first of all, let me just get the four partners clear.
Sure. Well, the heads of our iconic parks, Audubon Park, and City Park, which are really kind of fall outside of the city's jurisdiction, even though they are part of the city. They're really sort of you know, quasi-private. Well, each one has its own special setup, so I won't go into it, but I think you understand that. And then Nord and Parks and the New Orleans Recreation Department, and Parks and Parkways, which do fall under the city's administration, and which for many, many years, decades, have been responsible for the combination of our recreation programs and the park green spaces, as well as not just the parks, but also the neutral grounds and other kinds of wonderful green space that that we have the benefit of here.
Okay. So back to my core question, which is, how did you get this to happen? Because as I said, it's not every community initiative that the city embraces and actually, you know, helps you to fund and make happen. So as another nonprofit in the city that struggles for funding for things, you know, I can't say, wow, what do they do that I don't do? You know, I have to understand the ingredients. And clearly one of the things that you did was put together some pretty powerful partners. I mean, you know, we're not talking other minor nonprofits. You're talking the City of New Orleans, Audubon Park, City Park, Nora, Park and Parkways. These are all, you know, people who have the wherewithal to make things like this happen. So how would you account for, you know, other than people care, we care about our green space. So there's no doubt about it. It's probably one of the key reasons I live here, because I don't live here to go to Bourbon Street. I live here on Esplanade Avenue, where to get home from any direction, I'm going to pass under these magnificent trees that line the boulevards of the city, and, you know, are, by the way, really threatened. So I assume that one of the goals, and that's going to be my next question, of your program is to preserve and enhance the lifespan and the health of our live oaks that we're so proud of. But, you know, as I travel the boulevards, I came down Carrollton yesterday, and oh my God, I just saw so many tortured trees. And I had done a tour of the city with Tina Freeman, who is a photographer of green areas. It's one of our focus areas. And, you know, it seemed like we just couldn't not see them on almost every block. But when I drove down Carrollton coming home from Ochsner yesterday, I was just floored by how many trees looked like they were just heavily challenged in their lifespan because of factors that I'm not sure of. I don't know what the ingredients that were most challenging. It certainly didn't help cutting out the mantles of the trees to accommodate the power lines, which I know we needed to in order to be able to restore power when it goes down here too often because of our weather factors. But, you know, I just am so concerned about the progress that needs to be made to, first of all, retrieve really the health of many of those trees that are out there. And I know I'm just talking about trees and you're talking about a whole lot more. And so tell me what the goals of your program, Parks for All. I mean, I can right off the bat hear the equity statement in that. So it's not just about, you know, parks in the better to do neighborhoods in the city. It literally is intended to be equal, to be fair and for all the neighborhoods in the city. So tell me about that.
So, well, let's see, peeling back your onion a little bit, you've sort of broached on three topics, and I'll try to answer them quickly one by one. You know, how could we possibly get anybody interested in parks? And I think in a way you've answered your own question by talking about your love of the oak trees in your neighborhood and all through the city that really define New Orleans in so many ways. You know, if you're gonna try to come up with a topic to get a bunch of people behind your parade, there's really no better topic than parks. But having said that, you know, why is it that you know, parks are always struggling for funding? And I think the answer is that while people love parks, including our representatives, everybody loves parks, but for whatever reason, parks tend to be one of those areas that get short shrift when it comes time to cut up the budget. And that's true not just in New Orleans, but almost everywhere. And I think historically parks have been thought of as nice to have, but maybe not necessary to have. And what's become true in recent years, and again, I would say everywhere, not just in New Orleans, people are coming to appreciate that parks are more than nice to haves. They define the quality of life in ways that touch so many aspects of what are necessary for us in a community, not only to have a good sense of community, but also to have better health. In the case of New Orleans, to have better resiliency, we can use parks as gigantic sponges. And so people realize that, it takes on a whole new traction within the political dialogue. And I should have mentioned economic development too, because everybody understands that parks are more attractive places to live. And so they have the effect of upscaling the quality of a neighborhood. So for all those reasons, I think that it may not be a layup, but it's not really that difficult to get people all nodding in agreement that we can do a better job managing our parks. Now, as to our oak trees, I mean, it's a subsidiary effort, but very intrinsic to protecting our green space. To what? Protect our 200-year-old trees. You know, it takes a long time for these trees to grow. And so to come along and, willfully cut them down because you want to, put up a apartment building, or because you're just, whatever your motive might be, we need to be careful in protecting our old trees. Not to say that old trees that are dangerous and riddled with termites shouldn't come down, or that we don't need to trim trees in order to keep them away from power lines. We do need to do that, but we need to do it with intention and care. And there's an effort, one of my colleagues in the green space world is working to develop a program that will ensure that all of us are more protective of the old trees.
What is that effort called, and who's your partner on that?
Yeah, it's the partner is David Marcello. Uh-huh. And the name of his organization is, David, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it's New Orleans Canopy or something. The Canopy is in the title. And David is an attorney and involved with at Tulane. He teaches a course and I forget the title of his program, but he's spent the better part of his career, developing intelligent law, public law.
I would call it intelligent and caring law, because his program really aims to alert lawyers to how they can help change civic matters that are not supportive of quality of life, as you described it.
Yeah. No, he's terrific. So anyway, he's working on, changing our codes to make sure that we have built-in protections for trees that as the carpenters like to say, measure twice and cut once, so that we're just more purposeful about how we trim our trees. But getting to your last question, I think, which was, the overarching purpose of the plan, that it's really a vision plan. It's not trying to say, look, this is exactly what you have to do and how you have to do it. Although it does a pretty good job of laying out a scenario of the right moves over the next, there's a 1-year plan in order to kickstart the whole thing, and a 10-year plan But, you know, we all know that a plan is only as good as the people who grab onto it and execute it over a period of time. And so in that sense, I think they've done a great job of setting the table for a long-term vision plan, which really has three pillars. Three goals, if you will. One is to provide better accessibility all through the city, which, so that the people can get from where they live to a green space as beautifully and efficiently as possible. We have a lot of opportunity to create linkages between our green spaces that we've begun to take advantage of. I would say, especially since Katrina, you know, with the creation of bike paths and improving our neutral grounds and so forth. But there's a lot of work to be done there. And then to provide better access. And what's the difference between access and accessibility? Well, that refers to the idea that you have access to a good park, that you have a good green space that you arrive at. And the distribution of our green space assets in the city has been uneven, and to use, you mentioned the word equity, inequitable, in that there are parts of town which have been underinvested, underserved by the quality of their parks. And so a huge driving force of the plan is to correct those gaps. And then, you know, and again, these are overarching, almost philosophical ideas, but to upgrade all the parks to better quality. So that's the framework, which sounds as if it could be any plan. But what makes this plan useful for New Orleans is that as you get into the details of it, it's very specific to what we can do to improve the system. For example, a big part of the feedback that we got from the community, and going back to the idea that this is a community plan, the planning process included 6 months of reaching out to all parts of the city to get good community feedback, and overwhelming desire of our citizens is to improve our neighborhood parks. You know, our iconic parks are spectacular. We are proud of them. They will continue to maintain themselves and even improve themselves in their own right. City Park is in the middle of a master plan of its own. I'll just say, put it this way, I'm not worried about City Park and Audubon Park. They are great parks, and they're always going to be great parks. Our opportunity from a planning standpoint is to improve our neighborhood parks. And what the plan has done is, for the first time, is gone and examined all of our parks, big and little, all across the neighborhood, all across the city, over 200 parks, rank them according to various measures of quality, and thereby created a way to prioritize how we're going to spend money. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we have to figure out how to spend limited resources to get the biggest bang for our buck. And the plan goes about that in a very careful and examining way.
At the moment, which is clear from what you've just said, is literally just that, a moment. It is the beginning of a process. It is the kickoff, so to speak, and it implies a fairly longer time frame for working out with the details of what should happen and how it's going to happen. But so far, you've certainly, through this process of talking to people throughout the city and looking at and attempting to in some way prioritize the parks according to their condition and importance to the community, I guess are probably two of the variables that you were looking at. What what are some of the thoughts that are emerging that are important sort of criteria for the shaping of the longer range plan? So what are some of the things that you're looking at that are, you've already determined are important?
Well, I mean, I'd say, again, maybe for the benefit of emphasis, I would say this focus on neighborhoods is, I would put, you know, at the top of the list. Secondly, I would say that the plan encourages us to examine the structure of our system. I mean, we have the most balkanized, fractured green space management system in the country. And that's not me talking, that's the report states that directly. And so, you know, we have an opportunity to, hold on a second, let me turn this off. We have an opportunity to be more efficient, to save money, so that we can redirect those savings to capital investment and just more effective operating management. So, you know, I think that's something that, you know, the report does delve into it to a degree. It you know, it takes a comparative look, for example, at the park system in Baton Rouge, which it cites as, you know, one of the you know, best examples around the country, and it reviews three of them. But Baton Rouge, our neighbor up the way, has a you know, very interesting model for us to consider in order to make our system arguably you know, more efficient. You know, there's lots of opportunity to re-examine our funding sources. You know, and then I would say too that this is not just about fixing up our parks. This is about creating new iconic parks. So, you know, the thought process here, and, you know, realizing that, you know, it's very easy to dream. Maybe it's the simple part, but in as much as we haven't really done it to the degree that this plan provides in over 300 years, maybe it isn't that easy. But what I mean by that is that the hard part is trying to figure out how to accomplish it. And, you know, I think we have a lot more opportunity than we may realize to accomplish this over a long period of time. It can't happen overnight. You know, the whole world today tends to want, or not to wax too, you know, too sermonizing about it, but everybody wants everything to happen right away today. This is, you know, it takes a long time for trees to grow. It's going to take a long time to realize this plan, but there's no better place to start than now.
So it's actually considering how green, to me as a New Yorker who grew up with a whole lot more built environment than natural environment. Although there was a neighborhood park near where I grew up. It was called Franz Siegel Park in the Bronx. Because, you know, there was a very strong Dutch roots in New York early on, and the Bronx stayed a little bit more on the Dutch side for longer than Lower Manhattan, which developed, of course, much faster. But I think that the neighborhood park focus is a very important one. But considering how little attention has gone to this issue and resources have gone to the issue, the fact that this city is as green as it is certainly a it speaks to our potential.
You know, we, you and I have the good fortune to live in beautiful old neighborhoods in the city. You know, I live in the Garden District, you live on Esplanade. And so we do tend to think of our city as fabulously green. And it certainly has the potential to be fabulously green everywhere since we basically live in the tropics. But the truth is, the our canopy is was devastated by Katrina. And at this point, we have a surprisingly poor overall tree canopy citywide. And that kind of, that gets back to that whole issue of equity and why is it that some areas are very green and others aren't. You know, I'm involved with another organization that I'm sure you're familiar with, SOUL, which stands for Sustaining Our Urban Landscape, Susan Burley's operation to plant trees in the city. And she conducted an analysis of the city's tree canopy a couple of years ago and determined that, you know, it's only like 10% of our city is canopied, and maybe less than that. I'm trying to remember, it's maybe 9%. And, you know, several cities in the South have canopies of 30, 40, 50%. So we are way short of our potential to have a green city.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked when I was told, first of all, how many trees were lost in Katrina. I was shocked also to hear that that we had a deficit, you might say, in comparison to many cities. Because you're absolutely right, because of where I live on Esplanade Avenue. You know, in all the neighborhoods I lived in New York, and I lived, you know, I got out of the Bronx as quickly as I could, and wound up in the West Village area, and then ultimately in the Arts Soho area, and then my last place was in the Wall Street area. I literally lived in a building that was in the midst of a very built environment, very little green space. So it's hard to, for somebody who's, I mean, I'm looking out at my window and a Chinese fan palm that we planted when we first moved to this location in 1970, I always get this wrong, but it was around about 74, 75, that now tops the house, which is pretty high. And all the pond, and then all of what's the word? I have this memory issue that goes along with my sepsis event.
You're not alone.
What's your generations that you throw off is a word for it. I'm not able to grab it.
Our generation,
all the babies,
huh?
The babies, all the baby trees that grew, I had basically no idea how promiscuous Chinese fan palms were, and we literally have hundreds of fan palms all over our property. And basically, when you walk off the main avenue into the garden, you are in a jungle. I mean, it is just plain a jungle. And so I tend to feel that I live in a very green place. But I want to go back to your list of the goals of your program. So one is really your number one is develop, making sure that there are neighborhood parks. And let me tell you a sub purpose of those neighborhood parks that you've probably thought of and talked about, but I want to put an emphasis on how important this is that might not be on the list of priorities. So right now, you know, music is, of course, this maybe the strongest of all the art forms that we support here. And it has combined with the move towards Airbnbs to result in a lot of amplified music in the heart of residential neighborhoods. So I live, for example, between the Degas house that has at least two, often three weddings a week. Now, if they were featuring some of our leading acts, that'd be one thing, but that's not exactly the case, but it doesn't matter. Amplified music doesn't belong in the backyards of residences. And so I was, as I looked at that issue, when that was up before the council, I really tried to put across the issue of making sure that there were places where live music could be performed throughout the city that took advantage of green spaces and underdeveloped spaces where you could have live music and not blow somebody out of their house to have to go out to eat if they can afford it. I mean, I think that providing cultural space in green spaces is an important, should be an important goal. And this is just me speaking, so I mean, I don't represent anyone.
No, I think that's true. I mean, you know, City Park is going to have the LPO concert next Wednesday, I think it is. Parks classically are fabulous places for people to get together for cultural events. I mean, you think of, you mentioned New York a couple of times, and think of Central Park with Shakespeare in the Park. And I used to live in New York myself and attended a bunch of concerts there. I mean, it's a natural place for people to congregate and relax and enjoy themselves in whether it's the arts or really any kind of festival.
Good. So you, as one of the leaders of this effort, I am going to consider my touchstone in the effort to make sure that I focus on making sure that you guys are getting the support you need to promote that use. I think it's a very important use because it's great for the parks, great for people, great for neighborhoods, but particularly great for residences that are next to venues that normally like to present live music. Amplified is the key word. They can have music and maybe not amplified would be a little bit more humane. Besides that, you also mentioned efficiency of the overall management of the parks as a second priority. Are there any other priorities that you think is important to mention that will encourage people to make that phone call to their representative on the council before Monday? So they have to, I mean, they've got three and a half days.
Yeah, basically. Well, I would say this. This is in some ways a long-term vision plan, but this is not a pie-in-the-sky plan. And there are a number of elements of this plan that identify aspirational projects that are on the drawing board as we speak. Lincoln Beach would be an example. And so I think one of the incentives for people to come out and express an interest in this plan is to know that they're pushing for something which is in some ways already in motion. And what I know, I happen to be aware that one of the things that the administration is trying to do now is to take this plan and figure out the ways in which it is already latched on to what is going on, so that the plan dovetails nicely with the city's intentions to make it a better city. I mean, this is, on the one hand, it's a brand new plan. It's an original plan, but in the spirit of that old saying that there's nothing new under the sun, there's a lot in this plan that people have been thinking about. And so that you could view the plan as a way of turbocharging goals and ideas that people have had and which just need more determination to figure out the funding and figure out, a way to get it done. And, you know, to use another old saying, where there's a will, there's a way. So by showing up and expressing your support of the plan, you're expressing the public will for this plan to take place. And our representatives are responsive to the public will. So let's get out there and show them what we want.
Do you happen to know approximately what time they're expecting this issue?
Yeah, 1 o'clock.
One o'clock. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something important I would want to put out there. Scott, is there any particular in your research, the research of your initiative, that you have identified as a really good model for the kind of park green space that you can foresee coming out of your plan? I mean, you've mentioned neighborhood parks as a high priority and some kind of equity in a sense is part of that. And then I know you mentioned the Baton Rouge Park, so we have that. But are there any other parks that you would suggest people take a look at online to see little pieces of the vision that might emerge from what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are park systems in the country that run more cohesively than ours, and therefore that may be one reason why they seem to have their act together better than we do in some ways. I don't pretend to be an expert on all the parks in the country, but I think about Minneapolis. I think Houston is doing incredible work with its parks.
Who is doing incredible work?
Houston, Nashville is Chattanooga is another. I mean, there are lots of cities. I think Atlanta has done some amazing things.
Did you say Miami?
Philadelphia and New York, New Yorkers for Parks, which is an advocacy group that was started around 2000 and really which was part of the inspiration for our group, Parks for All, was instrumental in the development of nearly 200 new playgrounds all across the five boroughs. So, yes, I mean, there are examples.
What's the name of that organization?
New Yorkers for Parks.
New Yorkers for Parks.
And so, I mean... and again, Baton Rouge is, I think, a very good nearby example for us to think about. But you know, I don't want to leave this on a negative note because I do think we have so much raw material to work with here. We have 80% of our population lives within a 10-minute walk of a park. Now, a lot of cities would kill for that. I mean, that's kind of a cliched goal of park managers all over the country for people to live within a 10-minute walk. And I can tell you that number, 80%, is relatively high. So we are, I don't want to leave your audience.
80% of people are near a park. And what is the 10 number?
Within 10-minute walking distance.
10 minutes
of a park.
Walk, okay.
But I again, I don't want to leave the audience with the feeling that, you know, we everything here is broken. I mean, New Orleanians love their
I don't think you've left that impression at all.
Good,
I mean,
good.
We've talked about the fact that we have some amazing parks. I mean, Audubon, right. And City Park. I mean, one of the reasons.
But also some of our neighborhood parks are quite wonderful, right. too. It's just, you know, we're all in the business. We humans all should be in the business of striving to do better. And that's all this is about, is striving to do better.
Well, I think that's our closing line, because we're over time again. I have now two overtime interviews on my hands, but they're both excellent. The other one was with Kalama Yasalam on poetry for Poetry Month. And so I can adjust the timing of his, because he doesn't have a Monday deadline when the city council is taking up this plan. And I'm not sure, you know, exactly what does and doesn't happen after Monday, but I know that it's important for people to turn out. So let me encourage you in the audience, if you enjoy our parks, the little ones or the big ones, or literally just passing through areas that have, you know, those great the canopy of oak trees, you need to be in the city council chambers at 1 o'clock on Monday and add your voice. And, you know, they usually will continue taking comments as long as there are people there to talk. So you can be fairly confident that you will have your chance to put in your word. I know I will be there, and I will be talking about the importance of cultural venues, space to keep things like live music out of people's backyards and in a place where people can enjoy it and not be able to hear their partner at the table talk. So Scott, all power to you and your folks. And thank you so much, because I know these things always turn out to be so much more time consuming than you think they're going to be, even though by now you have been involved in enough community initiatives that you do know. And so even with that knowledge, you still took this on. So big thank yous for what you're doing and all the other folks who are involved.
Thank you, David,
in particular, of course, I'm very familiar with David. He was one of the first people I actually worked with when I first came here, working for George McGovern. And we really helped keep this area as one of the high vote counts for the sane policies of a man that was never appreciated as much as he should have been. All right. Thank you so much. And I know I'll see you soon, one way or another. Okay.
Great.
You take
Bye.
Care.
You
All
too.
Right.